Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Monday.
Jaguars Monday.
Presented by Kangaroo Express. Jaguars Monday with J.P. Shadrick, Jaguars great Tony Baselli, and CBSSports.com senior writer Pete Prisco is sponsored by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank.
Bring me some chocolate pudding.
Jaguars Monday starts right now.
From the HananiaAutos.com studio at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Monday. J.P. Shadrick with pride of the Jaguars left tackle Tony Baselli here in Jacksonville. Pete Prisco is with us on the line down in South Florida at CBS Sports Studios. Plenty to get to tonight after the Jags fall in overtime in Indianapolis. 16-13, the final yesterday at Lucas Oil Stadium. We'll break it all down. And your calls coming up in the second hour tonight. They should be... lively would be a word for that. Is what you think? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, they want to get after you tonight, Baselli.
Yeah.
I guarantee it.
Captain Sunshine?
Captain Sunshine. I don't think Captain Sunshine is going to be able to throw any sunshine on this one.
I don't have much sunshine today.
No, oh. you're in one of those. You're in the week the mood you were 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, that one hurt. I'm not going to. That
3 weeks ago.
That one yesterday hurt my feelings really bad.
Hurt your feelings.
Hurt my feelings.
Really? It's personal for you.
You took it personal.
What happened?
I don't know why, but it just bothered me.
To the point you didn't sleep last night?
No, not that bad. But to the point where I've thought about it all day. You know, I watched the film, and it's just one of those things that we should have beat them. This team's better than the Colts.
Without Andrew Luck.
They're better. And to lose that game the way they did and not executing in the second half and not taking advantage of opportunities is frustrating. And I only can imagine what the coaching staff and the players are feeling. I mean, it just is so frustrating.
Yeah, they should have won the game. They should be in first place right now. They should be a first-place team right now in the AFC South. End of story. They should have won that game. Now, they were playing against Matt Hasselbeck, who's 122 years old.
What bothers you. I mean, when you get something served up on a platter like that, you got to take advantage of it. How it is, Pete. Every week, every Sunday, guys get hurt, and if one of the star players are out, you take advantage of it. Because trust me, that's what good teams do. If a top-end DB's out or a pass rusher's out or a top-end offensive lineman or the quarterback or running back, you take advantage of that situation and you win the game.
You have to
win games you're supposed to win, and they should have won that game yesterday.
Yeah, and I thought the snap over the head of Blake was –
It was underneath his leg.
Underneath is whatever it was. The bad snap was the key play in that game.
How about the 13 penalties?
On key
moments and a couple mental ones. Just like illegal formation on 3rd and 2 that you convert.
Right.
And you end up not and you have to punt. Holding penalties. Now, a couple of the – pass interference calls that they got on them were just trash. And
what did you think about the one on Telvin Smith?
On Telvin Smith?
Devon
House.
Devon House, I mean. The one on House.
The one on House on the slant that went down there converted, they had to punt, was awful. It was awful. Every corner against the slant has it offhand around. And as long as you don't turn his hips or shoulders,
it's
not a penalty.
Right.
He didn't turn them.
How about the holding calls? Were they okay?
Oh, so ticky-tack. I mean, if you're going to call it that close, call it both ways. And here's the other thing that's starting to bother me. How many times are the officials going to allow guys to take two steps and hit Blake Bortles?
Right. He takes the shots and gets no flag. The other guys take half a step.
I just want to know how much longer that's going to happen in this league. It's ridiculous.
Ed Hockley says you got to get a little older to hit those calls.
Ed Hockley needs a... Never mind. I'm not going to say what I almost said.
You're really mad today, Tony.
I'm really upset because, listen.
This ought to be feisty today then.
I mean, it's ridiculous. You got to make plays when they're there. You got to take advantage of opportunities when they're there.
Well, and Tony, this is something we talked about in the summer during the show before the season started when they made the move to keep the young kicker, when they were deciding to keep the young kicker. The situation you do not know is can he make the clutch kick in pressure situations?
But, Pete, do we know that Scobie's making that kick?
I'm not. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying whether Scobie would make it or not. This is the first time the kid had a chance to make a pressure kick in a pressure situation, and he didn't make it. The first one, I'm going to give him a little bit of a pass. 53 yards is not a gimme field goal.
No, but he has plenty of leg. That's the.
But the next one,
And someone said, well, it was 48 yards. 48 yards in today's league, you make that.
You make the kick.
You make it.
Yeah. Particularly in an era where six of the top 10 field goal kickers in terms of accuracy of all time are current active players right now. So
you got to make that.
You got to make the kick.
I mean, but it should never have come down to that. Never. I mean,
You're at a loss for words.
There's
today.
So much frustration it on is. His I mean, face. Right now,
I'm trying to figure out where to go. With my frustration.
I was almost going to ask him, I said, you know, you were that upset that you didn't sleep. You said no. I was almost going to ask you if you were that upset you didn't eat, and then I knew better than to ask you that one.
Yeah, come on, Pete.
I mean, there's so many things that you just – I mean, the defense – the run defense of this team is very good. It really is.
Yeah, the defense overall, guys – I mean,
but here's the problem, JP.
Pass rush.
You can't give a quarterback – I watched. I don't think they never – they don't win one-on-one. Nobody. The whole game against an awful offensive line in Indianapolis. I watched them on tape before. I'm like, this is the time you get – with Hasselbeck sitting back there, you tattoo him. If we bring four, we're not getting there. We're not winning one-on-one. I think I only saw like one or two guys win one-on-ones the entire day. If we're not blitzing – we don't get there with five a lot of times. If we're not blitzing and twisting, we're not getting there.
No, and it's obvious when you watch it. I mean, it's just, to me, that's the old Dante Fowler factor right there.
I mean, that, one guy, though, I mean, maybe.
Well, not just one guy.
Derek Marks really hurts not have him out
there.
Yeah,
but and if you get Fowler and he can win and sing, and you got to start double him, then other guys get singled, and you know what I mean?
There were single guys yesterday, Pete.
Yeah, well, they're not good pass rushers. Tony, who's a good pass rusher on that team? Clemens? I mean, at times he could do it, but he can't do it. He can only do it in little bit of spurts. He's old. I mean, that's the issue. They don't have a pass rusher.
The best one-on-one pass rusher is Ryan Davis on third down. And he didn't have a great day, but he's the best one of them.
Interesting.
I mean, it's just, yep. I mean, I don't even know what to, I honestly, part of it, I was thinking about what am I going to say coming in. I don't even know what to say. Because you control, I mean, what, they have 430 yards offense or
yes,
something?
Yes.
The 13 penalties, I mean, come on. And some of the penalties are just so bad.
There was that one drive on defense for the Jags when they were on the field defensively. 5 penalties for 42 penalty yards on the touchdown drive for Indy.
Now, the one that extended the was roughing the passer on Clem where he grazed his helmet. It was so – I mean, they
by
call
letter,
that
– By letter
by
of the
letter
law.
By letter of the right call. Yeah. But I don't blame Clem for that. He's no. the, I mean, he's trying to go block the pass. His hand comes down. It just skims the
Hasselbeck
helmet.
Hasselbeck ducked, too.
I mean, right. yeah. So, I mean, that's not Clem's fault. I mean, that's a bad luck. But if they're going to call that, which is the right call, call the time when guys are taking two or three steps and hitting Blake and just running into him to knock him around. I mean, come on. That's supposed to be a penalty. If that's how you're going to call the game, call it that way.
Well, it's going to be a tough one to get over, but you're on a third game of a 3-game road trip. I know it's not a long road trip. You got to turn right around and go to Tampa, and they're not very good. But, you know, you can't sit there and say that the Jacksonville Jaguars are very good right now. Quite honestly, they're not. And so that's what happens when you're not a good football team. You fall to 1-3.
But they're that close to being 2-2 in first place still, Pete.
Which tells you how bad that division is, by the way.
Well, but here's the other thing. I mean, you look at the 3 losses. Take the Patriots out. I mean, they weren't winning that game. They played awful against the Panthers. Now, I know the Panthers are undefeated, but if you play well, that's a completely different game. And then this one. I mean, this, at worst case, you should be 2-2 right now, and you're not. And the feeling that I think the entire organization and fan base had after that game yesterday was so deflating because it was a game. It's like, come on. What do we have to do to win? And that's what this team needs to learn to win.
Well, it's pretty darn hard to win in the National Football League when you score 13 points, Tony.
That's my point. You got to score. I don't disagree with you.
Well, and that's been an ongoing problem over the years. So, look.
You know what I like the young players we have. I really do. And I thought Allen Hurns had a great big day. Great game. And he's a solid guy. But, Pete, looking at this roster, how many game changers do you have on the roster right now?
Well, it's hard.
Oh, how about impact players? How many impact players do you have on the roster right now?
Do you count Yeldon?
Is he an impact player? I mean,
what is like your definition of that?
Like Freddie Taylor, impact player? No.
I'm just talking. Well,
a guy you have to plan for. Is that what you mean?
A guy that can take over the game. A guy that's going to, you know, do something extra. You know, I think TJ Yeldon has shown spurts that he's pretty special in certain places. But I'm not ready to say he's that. But I was thinking about that last night and after the game and today. I mean, on the offense and defensive side of the ball, how many impact players do you have that just when you need a big play, they're going to make it? They're going to take over the game.
None. Julius Thomas might be. Not there. Blake Bortles could be. You don't know.
A-Rob at some point could be, maybe.
Right. He has the look of it sometimes.
Right.
But to answer your question right now, Tony, nobody. And you know what else shows up on a consistent basis? Lack of speed.
It's not a fast team.
No.
It is not a fast team.
Because Yeldon's not a fast runner.
No.
Robinson's not a fast receiver.
No.
Hearns certainly isn't a fast receiver. No. They're not fast on the defensive line. They're not fast at linebacker, though Telvin Smith is. I mean, that shows up to me when you watch their games and their tape. That's not a fast football team. I wanted to ask you something. Did you have a problem with Yeldon up the middle on 3rd and 11 from the 33 at the end of the game in overtime?
I think I would have been more aggressive the entire 3-down series. And I guess they ran it on first down.
Minus one. And
I like the call because they've been gashing them a little bit with the play they ran. They tried to throw it on third down, and they were out of sync. I don't know what the problem was. One of either Blake had it wrong or Alan Hearns. I think it was Hearns. Maybe it was Robinson.
No, it was Hearns on second down.
Yeah, were off, not on the same page. And then third down, I think they just said, let's just get it as close as we can and kick the field goal. Because if you drop back to pass, you get sacked, you're out of field goal range. But I think I would have been more aggressive on 3rd and 11. With a young kicker, I would have tried to get a first down.
Yeah, and you say they gashed him. In that drive, they had a run for 2 yards, a run for 5 yards, a run for minus one, and then the run for three.
No, but so when I say that, the play they ran, they were successful on it in the first half. It was the big run. So the play they were calling, they felt comfortable with, that they thought they'd get something. So on first down, I'm fine with that. I'm okay with that. In the situation you are, a young team, I'm okay with that. I just think I would have been a little more aggressive, you know. But at the same time, I understand what Gus is thinking. You know, let's go get 3 or 4 yards, and it's between a 47 and a 49-yard field goal. Our kicker has plenty of leg. He should make that.
But he had already missed, Tony.
Pete, I'm agreeing with you. I would have been more aggressive.
Well, then say that.
I would have been more aggressive, but I understand.
No, you can't have it both ways. You have to have it one or the other way. You either want him to throw the pass and try and be aggressive on third down.
No, but you can say you would do it different, but you can understand the thinking of the person who did what they did. I understand it.
I don't. I wouldn't have done it. I would have tried to get more yards because the field goal kicker had already missed, and he had this glazed look on his face like he saw.
Here we go.
Ghost.
You looked him in the eyes again. I've heard this. I've heard you talk about it. See it in their eyes.
Let's put it this way. But when he was trotting out to go make that kick, I sat in the green room over here at CBS, and I said he hasn't had a chance in hell of making it. None.
Nah, that's great. I was thinking he was going to make it.
Okay, if they get 5 more yards, does he make that kick? Because it kind of tailed off at the end, right?
Pete, I don't know.
Well, there's the five. Throw the pass for five. You make the kick.
I don't know.
You didn't like the strategy, so I'm going to put those words in your mouth. You just won't say it.
I said I would have been more aggressive on third down.
Why don't you just say you don't like the strategy?
Pete, I'm not in the mood today. You're lucky you're not here. I'd beat the hell out of you right now.
That's it. I'm calling all the hall voters. You're out.
There's a C on his chest. There's a C on his jersey.
What is, no, it's CS, Captain Sunshine.
That's right.
You know, that's taking
on there's a lot of sunshine right now. I mean,
and, Tony, that's taking on a life of its own right now, by the way. I know.
We'll come back in a moment and discuss the Jags offense. Blake Bortles' performance yesterday. The Jags will be back at Everbank Field Sunday, October 18th, a 1 o'clock kick against J.J. Watt and the Houston Texans. Great seats available. Get your tickets now at jaguars.com/tickets. Phone calls coming up in the second hour tonight. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Games like these, they really challenge your conviction, you know, in how you want to approach it. I do know that, you know, it might be where everybody wants us to become negative, but I know becoming negative isn't going to work. It's not. Challenging our guys and demanding that we do things right and are disciplined and focused, that's what we need. And we're going to do that. We need to do that. I felt like we were doing that, but it's not showing up. And in this game, it bit us a little bit.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley earlier today in his Monday press conference here at Everbank Field. Jaguars Monday continues. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli here in Jacksonville. Pete Prisco down in Fort Lauderdale.
I don't care about Pete. Let me translate.
Okay.
You're all mad at me now.
He's hot.
He didn't even answer my text when I sent
him a
text.
Yeah, you're dang right I didn't. Just shut up. You know what I heard that in Gus right there? And he's not going to get negative, and getting negative is not going to work. What I heard in Gus's, and I wasn't here for the whole presser, so JP, correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Disappointed is the wrong word, but a coach who is going to communicate very strongly with his team that things need to change. And it's not good enough in the level of accountability and execution must go up. And he'll say it in a positive manner, but he'll get his message through very clearly. Gus was not happy after that game at all.
No, he was not.
Was that accurate?
That seems right. Because he's going to – you know how he's going to be in a press conference situation. He's not going to throw a team under the bus.
He's never going to – for everyone who's going to call in, I'm just warning you, I'm going to tell you to be quiet if you say this. Gus Bradley is not going to call this team out in the media, nor should he. But what he just said was very poignant, and what I heard is like, this is going to be fixed because it's not okay.
Well, if it isn't fixed, I think Gus is in trouble. And I hate to say that, but that's the reality of it. I mean, we saw a coach get fired today who had 16 more victories than Gus does.
But also expectations were much different there. They were expected to contend for the AFC East. Are you saying if they don't win this week, you think Gus gets fired?
No, that's not what I said. I'm saying down the road. I mean, this team has to start making progress in terms of wins and losses, Tony.
It needs to be trending in the right way. You're right.
Yes, and I'm not going to sit here and say Gus is the problem because, look, right now they have a ton of guys out. They have talent issues at a lot of spots. It was a complete rebuild. It's hard to evaluate a coach from that standpoint, but ultimately, he's the guy who's going to be judged on the wins and losses.
And I want to go back to because you never answered the question fully, and we didn't maybe and we didn't get into it because I was thinking. I mean, to be a good team and to be a team that competes for division titles and to go to the playoffs and make a run, you have to have a handful of impact players. And you can go through the list of every team, and they have them. Some have two, some have five.
Well, the good teams do.
Yeah, I mean, but, yeah, they have impact, you know, a player that around the league, and the Pro Bowl is a little bit overrated sometimes, but Pro Bowl-type players. And the hard thing with this roster right now, and I think, Pete, you and I agree, we see guys that possibly could be that, but we don't know if they are. And that's the hard thing right now because it was an overhaul. It's such a young roster and you have to let those guys develop. That is an issue. I mean, guys like Allen Robinson, and I'm not trying to put pressure on him, and maybe he can't. Maybe TJ can't. Maybe, Cyprian can't, who, by the way, I thought played a great game. Maybe Telvin Smith can't. Go down the list of guys, young guys, or Luke Jokel, whoever they are. But the guys that have been drafted over the last 3 years, a couple of them need, a few of them need to become impact players that are difference makers for this team to be good. Because I will say, and I'll continue to say, coaches can draw up all the plays and blitzes and coverages and everything they want, but the teams that win have players that go above the X's and O's and make impacts on a game.
Yeah.
And that has to develop. You either have to go get those guys in free agency, which is very difficult because those guys don't become free. Maybe we got one in Julius Thomas. We'll wait and see. I hope he is. But guys like Allen Robinson and whoever they are, they need to do the extra. They need to, when you catch a 5 yard, you need to break a tackle and take it 50. That long pass that he caught early in the game, he needs to run through that and stay on his feet and score. You know, on the defensive side, Sip, instead of just being in tight coverage and making a good tackle, which he did yesterday, needs to break on it and pick it off and make a house call. You know, Telvin needs to come up with the big strip sack. Or, you know, go down the list. You know what I'm talking about, Pete. But that's the thing, because you look at it, and this is what's so frustrating. I was watching that game yesterday and watch it again, and there's not like glaring – there's some glaring mistakes as far as penalties and lack of execution here or there that stop drives, snaps, and the pass rush is obviously a major issue that shows it's very obvious on tape. But there's also a lot of good things, and there's a – listen, for the first time in 3 years, this offense has a rhythm. And it looks like, you know, Greg Olsen has a system, and it makes sense. You know, you watch – you look out there and like, okay, that looks like guys are open. It makes sense what they're doing. But it's about guys. It's about the Jimmys and the Joes. It's about guys making plays. It's about beating a guy one-on-one when you have to get a sack and you get it. It's, you know, it's about breaking a tackle and taking it to house. It's doing the little things. It's Blake, you know, making a play and getting off his first two and sitting in the pocket and stepping up and firing it down the field on a broken play. And we saw that on Allen Hurns on the touchdown. But it's more of those plays. Because if you look at the teams that win – and that are going to be in the playoffs, they have guys like that. And those are the guys you have to game plan. Those are the guys you're worried about. Those are the guys that change the outcome of games.
And when you guys were good, back in the day, you had those guys. You had Jimmy. You had Fred. You had Bracken. You had you. You had Brunel. You had,
you mean, had Cersei at the right. I mean,
yeah.
They don't have that.
They don't have that. They just do not have that. Then they had a handful of good, really good players around them. But also, now you got to look at it from this standpoint. You thought your second-round pick wide receiver was going to be one, Marquise Lee. You thought
that, he can't get on the field.
Right? You thought, well, right, I know. But I'm saying, you thought the first-round defensive end or outside linebacker
hurt.
Slash Lee, thought he was going to be one. He's not on the field. You thought Marks would be back and be one. He's not on the field. You thought Cyprian would grow to it. I thought that was one of his best games.
Oh, I thought he played very well yesterday.
He looked fast and had a lot of coverage ability and looked more
played
more
very
athletic.
Well.
Yeah, I thought he was good. Maybe he's going to grow into that. But you get the point, Tony. There's a lot of – Julius Thomas is another guy you paid big money for. You thought he'd be one of them. He's not on the field. So a lot of those guys aren't on the field. But when they do get on the field, if they do get on the field, then they got to start making plays. You get paid or you get drafted in a high slot, you got to start making plays.
We'll come back in a moment and talk about one of those guys, Blake Bortles. We'll break down his day. Really good first half. What happened in the second half to the Jags offense? That's coming up. No, never miss a Jags kickoff when you ride the JTA Stadium Shuttle. Service begins 2 hours before the game and runs until 1 hour after the game ends. The JTA Stadium Shuttle, your ride to Jaguars action. Blake Bortles talk when we return. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
I think we're still, you know, looking for consistency from him. He made some really good plays, But, you know, it's like we complete, and then we have an incomplete, and then we run the ball, and then we got to convert on third down. It's complete, and then it's incomplete. That's what took place in the second half. We're looking to string them together more often than not, and I think that's with just his poise and decision-making and becoming more consistent.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley earlier today speaking about Jags quarterback Blake Bortles. Jaguars Monday continues. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Boselli here in Jacksonville. Pete Prisco is on the line down in Fort Lauderdale. Let's talk about the quarterback play yesterday. First half for Blake Bortles, Very good. 14 of 18, and then in the second half, the offense stalled a few times in midfield. Yeah. Still moved the ball, guys, but stalled, five punts and then the missed field goal at the end. What happened in the second half?
Well, I'll say this. I thought Blake at times was really, really good. He had a couple balls that you look at and you're like, where the heck are those going? Now, this week, I don't know if it was he was on the wrong page with the receiver. It looked like he tried to throw a couple back shoulders, and they weren't doing back shoulders, which can happen to between young guys. He missed one or two balls that I'm sure he'd like back. Deep one to Allen Robinson where he'd won outside in the overtime, and if he throws it inside just two or three more yards, it might be a six. And so I thought Blake was fine. I thought he was really good in the first half. The second half, there was a couple times that I thought, and I don't know the reads and what they're looking at and what he is directed to do coverage-wise, so I want to put that disclaimer out. Mm-hmm. But watching it, it felt like he had made his mind up. He was going somewhere before pre-snap, and he looked there, and he forced some stuff. And watching the tape, and it's hindsight's 20/20, but I actually saw it in the game a few times. TJ Yeldon is releasing out the backside, and there's no one within 15, 20 yards of him. And if Blake looks at the one side, it's not there. You see quarterbacks all the time scan and dump it to the back and let him go do work. And those end up a lot of times turning into big plays because now you're in space with a linebacker one-on-one or a defensive back trying to come up full speed, and TJ Yeldon's shifty. If nothing else, he's shifty. And it felt like he never got there because he had made his mind up that's where he's going. Now, one time in particular, he had no choice because the rush was coming. He was going to get tattooed, so he had to get rid of the ball. But there wasn't any one thing that watching, you're like, boy, he was bad in the second half because he did this. He missed a couple of errant throws, but my only criticism, and maybe that's what he's told to do by Greg Olsen, is to go there. If you get this coverage, work this side, and this is where you're going. But that'd be my only real watching the tape, my only real criticism.
He looked, as the game progressed, that he got tighter to me. And by that I mean early on he looked to be playing free and loose, and I still think he plays his best football when he plays that way. And for whatever reason in the second half, it wasn't like he was getting pounded or anything. I mean, there's some pressure, but it wasn't like he was getting pounded. He seemed to get tighter as the game went on and pressing a little bit more, and almost as if, okay, he looked up and he saw the scoreboard. He said, you know what? They're in a game on the road that they probably have a chance to win. And it looked to me, and I don't know if that to be the case, but that's at least what it looked like from the TV tape, Tony.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah.
Did he play tighter in the second half, though?
I don't know. I mean,
Look looser?
It did. Pete, unless it's obvious, I try not to jump to those conclusions because I think it's so hard and you can be so wrong. I know you like looking in the eyes of players and you can dictate and tell what they're thinking, but it didn't jump off that he was tight to me. No.
Hurried?
Maybe. Yeah, because when you hurry, you're not as accurate with the balls, and there were some balls that were not as accurate in the second half as they were in
hurried
the first
in
half.
His decision-making is something you noticed. So maybe
yeah,
that was,
maybe that was it. And so I'm not saying it wasn't. It wasn't as good. It was not as good.
And you mentioned those checkdowns. The Kansas City Chiefs make a living off of those things. Now, he's captain checkdown, but you watch tape, you know that. They drop out, and you swing it to Jamal Charles, and you get 8 yards, 9 yards. That's something he's got to get to. And, you know, checkdowns are a good thing. They're not a bad thing all the time.
You hate the checkdown.
No. Not if you go through your reads and it's then to the checkdown. If you go one and check down, then I hate it. But if you go 1, 2, 3 and progress through your reads and then check it down, I don't at all. I think that's smart.
You know a big issue, and I'm trying to find it, here it is right here.
What do you got? What are you looking at?
One of the things that also was glaring during the game was the – and I'm jumping around, and we'll come back to Bortles, but before I forget because short-term memory – is the Jaguars' defense gave up 47% conversion on third down. And a lot of those were third and long. And that was some of them were penalties – that was, I thought, one of the issues that – and a lot of that's because of pass rush. that helped the Colts stay in that game. If they were better on third down, the Jaguars were only, you know, they were 39%. That was one of the things that stood out also yesterday to me.
Not getting off the field on third down and long.
Yeah, just, I mean, yeah. Yeah, just giving up.
Well, plays. That goes back to the pass rush.
Yeah, it does. So, but, you know, it's that's why it's so frustrating, Pete. You look at this game. There's not one thing outside of the penalties. The penalties were glaring, and they made a difference in this game. Glaring. But other than that, it is just little things that and this team's not good enough sometimes to come overcome the little things that kept them from continuing drives and scoring points. I mean, they had a 300-yard passer, a 100-yard rusher, and a 100-yard receiver. And they got two turnovers. They won the turnover battle. I mean, how often in this league does that happen and you lose?
Yeah, not often.
I mean, it just isn't. And that's why you're just shaking your head. You're like, golly. You got to be better. It's the little things. It's the pre-snap penalties. It's the penalties that extend drives. Those things just kill you. Because the margin for error for this team is still not very big. And that's because I'll go back to what I said, because if you have impact players that can just do things, win a one-on-one and do things above and beyond the scheme, those cover up a lot of those little mistakes. You know, if you're getting, you know, let's talk about the Seattle Seahawks where Gus and a lot of this defense is very similar to. I know they got great corners, and Richard Sherman's a great corner. They have great safeties. I mean, they're outstanding, so they can really cover people up. But the other thing is, if they cover for a little bit, that rush is getting there. And it's a great combination. And so there's just little things like that that players, it's not always the scheme. It's the players that just execute at such a level, and that's how you win ball games.
Yeah, there's no Michael Bennett making havoc up front on the Jacksonville Jaguars defensive line right now.
No. I mean, just that it's penetrating, and even when he's not getting there, he's forcing the quarterback to move off his spot, which makes a quarterback inaccurate, that leads to turnover. I mean, there's so many little things like that you just look at. It's like, man, it's not that far away. And I know, and I read on Twitter and all the comments of the fans and frustration of everybody, I get it. But I don't think it's that far away. Now, it might be further away than anyone wants, because sometimes those things you can't fix until you get a player that can do that. And a couple of those players are hurt right now. And I'm not making excuses, because they should have beat that team with Matt Hasselbeck, no matter who's out there. But until you start making those plays, it's going to be tough. The margin of error is very thin, and that's where penalties and stuff like that really stop you.
I wanted to ask you this, Tony. Okay, we know Gus's ideal philosophy is to rush with four and play coverage behind it. Okay, that's his ideal philosophy. Well, that ain't working. So is it time to move off of that a little bit more? Because it seemed like when they did bring a little bit of pressure, you know, blitz guys, they didn't get them down that much, but they influenced them a little bit. Is that something they need to get away from? I know that's what he wants to do for the long run, is play, you know, his style, and which is to rush four and play coverage behind it. But the way this team is built right now, do they need to get away from that in the current?
I think they have to be more aggressive, and they were at times. I thought they were,
but I think, not enough though.
No, I would. I just don't. I mean, if you can't get there with four, you got to affect the passer. I think you got to take more chances and just say, hey guys, we're covering on the back half. Now, with all the injuries in the back half, you know, Aaron Colvin went out again because of the shoulder. Hopefully, he'll be back. We don't know. Sergio Brown's out, who's been playing very good free safety.
We'll get to all the injuries coming up.
You got a bunch of young guys, but at some point, it's like, listen, if a guy's sitting back there, I don't care how good you are on the back half. If a guy can sit back there for 5 seconds, 6 seconds, he's going to find somebody. And so I would probably be more aggressive.
Yeah, he might float a helium balloon out there or two, but like he did yesterday, but he'll find them. He wasn't very good, was he, Matt Hasselbeck?
He's good enough. He threw for 280 yards or something. I mean, when's the last time Matt Hasselbeck threw for that many yards?
Yeah, probably you were playing.
Yeah, possibly so. We'll come back in a moment and talk about these Jaguars injuries. Also a signing today, or this afternoon, for the Jaguars. We'll talk a little defense as well. Phone calls coming up, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. A lot of folks upset after yesterday, and they should be. 16-13 final in overtime. Jags fall in Indy. This is Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
There's self-inflicted wounds that are hurting us badly. I look at one drive defensively. They had a 13-play, 80-yard drive, and I think we had five penalties for 42. Over half the yardage came in penalties. And it's self-inflicted wounds. You know, some are aggressive, some are defensive holding, but decision-making and these penalties, you know, good teams consistently don't have even a series like that. So far too many penalties in that situation.
Head coach Gus Bradley earlier today, day after press conference. Jaguars Monday continues. J.P. Shadrick, Tony Buscelli here in Jacksonville. Pete Prisco down in Fort Lauderdale. Pete, while Tony's out of the room for a moment, let's get to the injury report from today. Middle linebacker Paul Posluszny has a high ankle sprain. He'll be evaluated further this week.
2 or 3 weeks if it's a high ankle sprain.
If it's that. But Gus said today, Pete, that it wasn't. Probably wasn't a traditional high ankle sprain, whatever that means. So they're still holding out hope, maybe, that could happen earlier than that. Aaron Colvin aggravated his shoulder, left shoulder it looked like. He'll continue to rehab throughout the week. Got to have him on the field, right, Pete?
Yeah, he's developing into a solid cover player and not having, you know, that's one thing, JP, they haven't had their secondary together. I mean, it's been one guy or the other that hasn't been in there, and that's been a problem.
Speaking of, James Sample has a shoulder contusion. Was going through some pain and weakness with his range of motion. The MRIs showed no significant damage. That's good news for Sample, the rookie.
Yeah, and again, another guy that's, you know, missed a lot of time this offseason with the hand injury and now suffering a shoulder injury.
Cedric Marks, boy, the Jags need him badly up front. Continues to progress from the knee injury. His practice activity will be increased this week, and his game status for Sunday will be updated on Friday. So not a lost cause this week. That's the best sounding news we've had in a while on Cedric Marks.
Yeah, and again, remember the early optimism of him playing in the opener kind of went kapooey early. And coming back from that injury is tough.
When he gets back, he's not going to be the Cedric Marks of last year right away. It's going to take a couple games to get under his belt, to get feeling comfortable and mentally ready to go the way he needs to go.
Yeah, and, you know, if you watch Geno Atkins a year ago and compare him to now, you'll see exactly what he's going to have to deal with. I mean, Geno Atkins couldn't or wouldn't, plant and couldn't hold a point and had more problems, and now he's back to being Geno Atkins again. It's probably a year away before you get the same Cedric Marks.
Julius Thomas undergoing a test today to determine if he's ready to be cleared for catching with his right hand. More information coming out Wednesday on that one. And we talk about having a playmaker. They need that in the offense for sure. Sergio Brown, the safety, increased practice load this week. He'll return from a calf injury. He continues to progress. Denard Robinson continues to progress from the knee injury. Brandon Linder with a torn labrum. He's going on IR. Marquise Lee undergoing rehab for the hamstring. And Lotulelei with a concussion after he reported symptoms after the game, the linebacker.
Yeah, it's not a good injury situation. I mean, it just isn't. And Linder going out for the year is a damning blow up front. I mean, he's the best offensive lineman. That hurts. When you suffer injuries like that, they're going to have a down the line trickle effect, and it's going to be a problem for him. Look, there's a lot of injuries in the NFL. That's just the way it is. It seems like this team, though, has been hit far harder than maybe some of the other ones.
How did A.J. Can play yesterday, Tony, in his place?
There were some awareness issues he had where I think he went the wrong way on the blitz. It led to a pressure. One or two things that were a little bit awareness more than anything, not physical, but he is a powerful human being. And he's going to be a good player. And so I thought he played – listen, for his first start, it was solid. There's some mental things that will get cleaned up, but the game will slow down for him the more reps he gets out there. But from a physical standpoint, he's a powerful guy. He moves people around. He can handle the bull rush. He's going to be fine. I mean, he's not as good as Brandon Linder, but he'll be fine.
And it's not such a bad thing to get him to play.
No, I think
I mean, because he might be the left guard. He's probably going to be the left guard last year. Now, I just from glancing at the TV tape again, you know how I love to dive into that offensive line. It looked like the left guard struggled again in a big way.
Yes.
I mean, is it time? It's time for a change. I mean, bottom line, they put Shatley in there. Put somebody in there.
I would put Shatley in there.
So you would go Shatley and Can and go move forward.
It's pretty risky because they're both really young players. And Zane does bring you a veteran presence. And, you know, mentally, you know, he's going to get you on the same page. But I don't think I thought Zane had a good preseason. I thought he played fine the first couple games. But the last couple games, from my viewpoint of watching it, physicality is just not the level I think you'd want. And I think Shatley would bring you more physicality.
All right, so the left guard should have struggled. The right tackle wasn't as good, I didn't think. Just off the TV.
He had a couple plays that were not like him.
Right.
That not up to the standard that he has set for himself or the standard he set by his play in the past. No, you're right.
And then you go to the left tackle with the bullseye on his back. Give me an evaluation of him.
I thought he played good for his first game back. He got beat inside on a spin move, but he was athletic enough to stay with Mathis and allow Blake to kind of
step around it.
I thought he handled the bull rush much better. Walden tried to bull him a couple times. He sat down on it. There was a couple plays. He ran block very well. So I thought Luke, for his first game back, I think it was solid. I thought it was a solid game by him.
Yeah, that group is never going to be good until they can all work together and they're all – you know what I mean.
There was some miscommunication inside on a couple blitzes, too, that should not have happened.
It looked like it. Was that Can or is that
– I thought Wisniewski one time – it looked like Wisniewski and Beatles weren't on the same page with the back one time. Beatles in the back weren't on the same page one time. Can, one at least one, maybe two. That's just too many. You can't have that.
We'll come back in a moment. Phone lines open. Get ready, Pete.
Here we go. I'm ready. I don't know if Tony's ready.
I don't know if he is either. He'll be ready after these ribs he's about to eat in front of us. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Your calls when we return. It's Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
Self-inflicted mistakes and penalties and, you know, different problems. And it's stuff we got to correct, stuff that's very correctable, and you know, we feel like we're you know, really close, but if you know, we eliminate some of those things, we'd be putting a lot more points up.
Stefan Wisniewski, Jaguars center, in the locker room earlier today. Jaguars Monday rolls along, second hour. JP Shadrick, Tony Baselli here in Jacksonville, Pete Prisco on the line from Fort Lauderdale at CBS Sports Studios. Phone lines are open, 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. We've got some ground rules tonight for these calls, guys. How about this?
What's the ground rules?
30 seconds or you're getting hung up on. No rambling phone calls tonight. How about that?
I like it.
So, we don't need just, like, rambling on and on. So, I'm going to stay true to that, and we'll get started.
I doubt it.
You guys ready, Tony? You ready?
I doubt you will. You never can handle it.
You're excited, Tony. I know
you can tell. Wait for
Captain Sunshine tonight is ready to answer some phone calls. Let's go to the west side. Chris will start us off to discuss red zone passing. Hello, Chris.
Hey, guys. I don't like to be the fan who questions play calling.
But you're going to be.
On a hunch, I did some research. Inside the 10-yard line, got 15 plays so far. 11 of those are a pass. So I thought the success rate might justify it. It doesn't. Three of the runs were good. One was no gain. Of those 11 passes, six were incompletions. One for no gain. They can't justify it.
What's your point?
10 seconds.
If they want to look at red zone problems, that's where they start.
So you're thinking they need to change the pass mix ratio up?
Absolutely.
Listen,
thanks for the call.
I don't disagree. I mean, I haven't broken it down that much, but the philosophy, it gets very difficult to throw the ball when you get in the tight red zone because there's just not that much room. And you run the ball in. I mean, that's how you should – that should be the attitude of running the ball in.
You know what? I want to go back and look at some of their formations because it's a pet peeve of mine. I've said it a million times. When you get in the red zone, you get tight red zone. Why do you got to get tight? Why not just keep it spread out and run that way, Tony?
Well, I don't disagree with you. I'm fine with that. But you got to be – I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's teams can do so many combination – coverages when you're in the tight red zone, so it does tighten up. And so, listen, I'm all for it. Trust me, as an offensive lineman, run the ball in, especially if it's first and goal from the six or in. at least give us a chance twice to run it in.
I was watching the Bengals tape today because I'm doing something on them this week. And against yesterday in their game, what they did is they actually overloaded one side, Tony, with an extra tackle. You know, and then they pulled the guard and the offside tackle.
Yeah, it's pounded in there.
Yeah, and it opened up. Those plays usually are one of two ways. Either somebody penetrates and you get nothing, or it opens up a crack and a crease and you kind of waltz into the end zone.
Yeah, so I don't think that's unfair question or criticism, whatever it is. I mean,
see, you're off to a good start. You're being nice right off the bat.
Well, that guy had some information at least. Let's go to the next one. Let's go.
Mike is on the north side. What's up, Mike?
Hey, fellas. Hope you're doing well. Real quick, Tony, I know you've played, great dude. Pete, I know you're nosy as hell, and you watch a lot of games, so you always got your little stats and facts. As far as the Jags, is this a coaching or a culture issue that we're currently seeing with all the penalties? And I say specifically coaching because I'm looking at the passes and the amount of drop passes that we're seeing.
10 seconds.
Is that really what the issue is? Coaching?
Well, they didn't have that.
I mean, a culture thing.
Yeah, they didn't have that many. They did not have that many passing drop passes yesterday. I think Mercedes had one. Excuse me.
Tony, you all right?
Yeah, Tony's all right, okay. He's okay.
He's getting all choked up.
Gesundheit.
Gesundheit. Thank you. So I think. Listen, there's not always. And you have to go back and look at the numbers. And yesterday it was way too much. But if you look at a lot of times the teams that have, you know, are in the upper echelon of penalties, it's not always a direct correlation to losses. It's because you can overcome those. Turnovers is the one where there's a direct correlation.
Well, penalties too.
But not as much, Pete. It's not as close of a – but listen, is it a coaching?
Well, I'll give you one. The Bills had 17 penalties enforced.
No, when you get over a certain number, then it's becoming, you know, chronic. But is it coaching? I mean, I don't think they're coaching people to hold or pass interference.
A lot of that is youth too, because if you don't know what you're doing, you're gonna next best thing is you're gonna grab somebody.
And then as far as like the one, you know, jumping off sides, I mean, that's not coaching. I guess the only one you can say is coaching when they don't know where to line up. Did they not know? Did they understand it? Or is that player? I mean.
Well, and I had this debate with somebody today, with Brady Quinn, actually, today. You saw this, the end of the Chargers game, right? They had a field goal from 39 yards out. He yanked it, but they were offsides. The outside guy jumped offsides. It was across the line. So they got another chance and won it with 2 seconds left. Who's responsible for that, the player or the coach?
That's the player.
Really?
Yeah.
No matter what, it's always the player.
Yeah, it's player.
I mean, don't you drill it into their heads and you know, don't do that. You can't do that. And then the guy goes and does it. Ultimately, the coach is responsible if you drill.
It's the player's responsibility. The player. You think the coach said, "Hey, make sure you jump off sides here because it's really going to work out well for us."
No, I think you just got to tell him don't try to rush. Don't even try to rush the ball. Just
Try to rush on a game-winning field goal.
Not try to rush, but make sure you can't be offsides. It's like when somebody goes to block a punt on fourth.
Pete, I promise you, because I've been in practices. They talk about lining up correctly, especially if you're outside. Make sure you're not offsides. I mean, I'd be shocked if that message was not delivered. That's a player.
You think it was delivered before the game-winning field goal?
Yeah, I would think. I mean,
I would hope.
I would think, but that's player. You got to make sure. I mean, come on. You know the rules. Lining up offside's not okay.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, though, a team that's penalized a bunch comes back to the coach. It just does. And like in Buffalo, that comes back to Rex Ryan. He doesn't have a bunch of young kids playing football. He's got him. He's got his team that's supposed to be good. And now you look at him and you go, you know what? They're making. When you have a team that has 17 enforced penalties, that's way too many, particularly after you had 13 at home and a couple weeks ago in Buffalo.
There's 13 so many. Let me answer it this way. They're all responsible. The coaching staff and the players, they're all responsible.
Yes.
And you're right, though. At the end of the day, it always comes back to the coach because so many different guys commit penalties, so it's always going to be back to the coach. Unless one guy is a habitual holder or whatever, it comes back to the coach.
Correct.
Habitual line stepper. Our first kicker call of the evening comes from John on the south side. Good evening, John.
Hey, guys. So my question is, I have no idea how Jason Myers is still on the roster. I mean, the first week I called you guys and I told you I didn't like the look on his face after he missed the extra point of field goal. He came back and missed three game-winning kicks and we still have him on the roster.
He missed two.
He
missed two.
Not
he missed two. Get your facts right before you call in.
Three. He thought there were three. In
oh,
mind,
stop it. No, he missed two. Come on.
He didn't know they called timeout in the first
Well, they
one.
Did. He missed two.
Yeah, he didn't know it. My point is he missed three. He didn't know that they did.
Well, he missed three, but two that counted. How about that?
Yeah, that's all he missed. Three, so you think he should be cut?
Absolutely. Has to be cut. Look at
really?
Kobe in Pittsburgh.
Has so, we're, first of all, I wouldn't cut Jason Myers. He has a great leg. He hit those right. He barely missed them. It wasn't like he shanked them. And you don't cut a young player like Jason Myers who has the talent to kick. Every kickoff is five to out of the end zone deep, so you don't get any return yards against him. And he has a huge leg. The 53-yarder would have been good for from 60-plus, and he missed it by about 2 feet to the right. I just don't think – now, listen, if –
if he know, misses, six, if he continues to miss –
yeah,
continues
six
to
weeks
miss,
from now, yeah, right. It's like, okay, the guy right. can't make him. But – after he's 7-for-10 on the year, and I wouldn't cut him. There's not a chance in the world I would cut him.
I wouldn't cut him either. And here's the thing: if Scobie hadn't missed those four field goals that he missed that then put up him on the street, people would be calling for Scobie to come back, and they'd be killing the Jaguars for keeping him. But since he missed and he's on the street, it's kind of lessened the blow. Have there been calls today for them to go get Scobie and bring him back?
They were last night after the game, Pete. I can tell you that.
Yeah, well, look, you made a decision. The decision was to go with the big leg guy. You knew you might have some growing pains with him. You weren't going to be a team that competed for a division title, at least you didn't think so, or a Super Bowl this year. If you grow this kid into becoming a really good kicker, then you pay off in the long run. No way do you get rid of him right now.
355-NFL-1, 355-6351, Bill in St. Augustine to discuss the Jaguars quarterback. Good evening, Bill.
Hey, fellas. I don't know if I just happened to catch it at the wrong time, but the last two drives by the Jags that failed, the cameras followed Blake off the sidelines to the bench, where he put on his hat and sat down, and, you know, I'm just looking at him like, man, what, are you going to check your Twitter?
10 seconds.
What are you talking about?
Tom Brady.
Come on. Okay. Just say what you did.
Peyton Manning. When you see them on the sidelines, they're studying overheads of the defense and they're putting data in their head.
Okay. First of all, let me say something about that. The TV camera didn't watch him the entire time because I watch him every time after a drive, and the entire time of the drive, he's sitting there with Greg Olsen going over stuff. So the 5 second clip that you caught of him walking off, putting his hat on, is not representative of what the guy does on the sideline. So that's dumb. That right there is dumb. That's a dumb comment.
Nothing from Pete on that one.
Well, you know, because it's the same thing. It's like when guys shake hands after it's the equivalent of guys shaking hands after a tough loss and smiling, and fans read into it that they don't care about the game. It's this exact same thing. It's irrational.
Saqib on the south side is a regular in the post game. He's disappointed. Good evening, Saqib.
Hey, what's up, guys? What's up, Pete Prisco?
How are you? Saqib used to be a regular on the Pete Prisco show, too.
And guess how many people care? None. Let's go. Ask the
question. Angry guy doesn't care about anything but himself today.
Ask the question.
Hey, I miss you, Pete Prisco. I just want to let you know, man.
I don't. Well, you ask the dang question. Your time's up almost.
30 seconds.
Hey, let me say this. We've been waiting for a long time for this team to stand up. We were told the third year will be better. It hasn't gotten better. It's not getting any better. If we lose one of these next three games, I'm going to be calling for everybody's head. That's just my personal opinion.
Well, technically, Saqib, they are better because they're 1-3. Last year, they were 0-4, and the year before that, they were 0-4.
I mean, that's not
so technically
Tony,
they're better.
That's not right.
No, technically they are.
Seven wins this year.
Oh,
yeah. I wanted seven wins this year.
Okay, how do you know you're not going to get them?
You're not going to get them the way we're
playing
right now.
Oh, come on, Saqib.
You
don't know anything. Come on. Now you're being ridiculous. Now you're – listen, being disappointed is fine. I'm disappointed. That was a gut punch yesterday, that loss.
But you think they have the look of a seven-win team, Tony?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Oh, come on. You know.
I don't, Pete.
You know.
I don't.
Okay, I think they have a chance to win this week at Tampa, but there aren't a lot of gimmies on the rest of that schedule, although the division stinks. Houston isn't very good. Tennessee's not very good. So – maybe you get the six, which is about what I thought they would win.
Well, I'm just saying, Saqib said they're 9 better. Technically, they are.
And he's calling for heads in a couple of weeks.
Good. Call for him, Saqib. Let me know how that works out for you.
Let's get one more call in before the break. We'll go to the Big Easy. Tyler is in New Orleans, wants to compare this year with a very special season in Jags history. Good evening, Tyler.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, sir.
I'm just wondering how you guys compare this rebuilding effort to what Tom Coughlin did by, you know, basically taking a second-year franchise all the way to playoffs. I mean, Tony, was like the mood on that 96 team that, you know, this team was just too inexperienced to reach that far, or was, you know, the expectations that high? I mean, it just feels like this rebuilding process is just taking a lot longer than usual.
Well, it's so different.
Thanks for the call.
And the league actually changed, and Pete even can probably describe this better than I can. They completely changed the entire process how you build a franchise, because they felt like they gave way too many advantages to the Jaguars and the Carolina Panthers with the two draft picks in every round. They had no salary cap issues, so they're load up on free agents. So it's tough to compare the two. This was a roster that they gutted and didn't have the benefit of getting, you know, a huge first draft pick of having basically 14 picks. And so I think it's apples and oranges a little bit.
Yeah, it is. And but it was a gut. And here's the difference between that 96 team. The 96 team actually played pretty well early on in the season and just couldn't figure out ways to win games. That's what that problem was. And they learned how to win games. I don't necessarily think this team has played that well. I mean, should they have won the game yesterday? Yeah, but I don't think they played that well. There were games where the 96 team, and you remember this, Tony, you'd get 550 yards of offense and lose the football game.
Yeah, I do remember that game.
Yeah, and you know, at New Orleans early in that season, the game you should have won, they didn't win. So there were games that year that team, you could see there was potential there. This team hasn't showed that yet. It's not, they're not the same thing.
We'll take a timeout. Phone lines are open. 355-NFL1, 355-6351. More with Tony Boselli and Pete Prisco. Reaction after the Jags fall in Indy in week 4. This is Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
There's all types of things that go into playing really good football, in which we played Sunday. We did play really good football. So we just have to play, you know, more sound football. It resonates with us from the head coach. And, you know, we believe in it and agree with him.
Jaguars defensive lineman Jared Odrick today in the Jags locker room after the Jags fall in Indy. Jaguars Monday rolls along. JP Shadrick, Tony Boselli, Pete Prisco.
Before we start taking calls again,
okay.
Pete.
Okay.
I was thinking about this during the break. You know, everyone calling in, and not everyone, but, you know, number of callers and people, you know, write in and message boards and everything else is, you know, saying this team stinks, it's no good, fire Bradley, fire Caldwell, you know, heads need to roll.
I'm on the chopping block.
They're not good enough, cut this guy, cut that guy. But you and I both know, one, it's never that easy, but the question I would have to you, Pete, to myself, and to everyone calling in, if you were head coach, what would you do to improve this team right now? If you were the GM, what would you do to improve the team right now?
Well, I'd probably be more aggressive on defense, for one. That would be one I would do. I would probably be a little bit more aggressive at the end of games, which I thought he should have been yesterday. Those are two things. But as far as what do you do personnel-wise, what the hell can you do? You have what you have, and guys are hurt.
You can't play. You're not going to drop new plays. I mean, like you said, you can maybe shift to be a little more aggressive defensively.
And offensively in situations.
Well, so, but I thought they were pretty aggressive. Take away the last series
of
downs.
I'm talking about in game, end of games. You got to go. At the end of the game, they had to be more aggressive, I thought. But
Pete, in fairness, they've proven to be very aggressive at the end of halves and in situations where they, you know, 18 seconds, most coaches would take a knee. Gus went for it to get points against the Dolphins. You know, backed up the first half, they were aggressive. 10 seconds left, they were aggressive, take a chance to get in a better field position. And so I'm just saying, I don't think it's fair to say they haven't been aggressively offensive.
No, I'm not saying that, but at the end of that game yesterday, I thought they should have been a little more aggressive. At some point,
that's not my question, though. I'm talking overall, because everyone is so mad. They're like, oh, we need a wholesale change. What changes are you going to make? I mean, that's what I don't understand. And that's what I appreciate, actually, about Gus. Is like, listen, what we are doing, we need to do better. We're not gonna go, we're not gonna reinvent the wheel. I'm not gonna change everything we've done. I'm not gonna become Sybil as a head coach and change the message all of a sudden, because it, players don't react to that, and you know that, Pete.
No, you got to be consistent. I think consistency is something you have to have if you're a head coach, because you go up and down, you have problems, and I think you see that in Buffalo with Rex Ryan. But Tony, there people are frustrated. You got to understand. You know, it's been 2.5 years of a supposed rebuild, and they're 1-3 again to start the season. I mean, you
1-3 again. They're 0-4 the first 2 years.
Well, but you get it. Okay, so they're a combined 0-4, 0-4, 1-3 in the first quarter of their last three seasons for a 1-11 start. That's not good enough.
I'm not saying it's good enough. You're missing my point. My point is this: the only way you like throw the baby out with the bathwater is in a situation where the team doesn't play hard. There's dissension. Like, the Miami Dolphins don't play hard.
Which is why he got it.
This is a team that plays hard. They make mistakes, a lot of them, in my opinion, out of youth. Not that the coaches couldn't be a little better in doing things and maybe be more aggressive. And I'm sure they sit back and watch film saying, we should have done this different, we should have done this. I mean, that's fine. Those are fair criticisms. We're going to take calls here in a second. And I'm just telling you, if you call and say, fire everybody, they don't know what they're doing, it's terrible, I'm not going to answer it. We're going to hang up on you, and we're going to go to the next call.
All right. Well, fair enough. Laying the law down. 355-NFL-1, 355-6351. On to that end, Scott is in Ponte Vedra tonight. Good evening, Scott.
Hey, what's up, guys?
30 seconds. Hey, how are you?
I just want to talk about, everybody's got to stop whining and complaining and griping. We're better than we were last year. We're one field goal away from being 2-2, which is night and day from where we were last year, regardless of the penalties. Regardless of different missed opportunities, we're a field goal away from 2-2. There's a lot of optimism. There's things to be optimistic about with this team. We don't have still some of the players in the skill positions to compete with all the other teams, granted, but we're getting better. And we're miles ahead from where we were last year and the year before. And there's a coach that you can bring in that's going to really do anything better. He can't go out there and kick the field goal. He put them in a position to win. They competed. Some of the guys had the best game they've ever played, Cyprian and those guys. Everybody needs to just quit whining.
So thank you, Scott. I appreciate that call from the sense of, because someone said earlier, this team's no better. I disagree 100%. Out of the first three games, and I'm not saying this is the goal by any means, they had a chance to win the first three games. I mean, three of the first four games, excuse me.
Sure, yeah.
In games that very easily could have gone either way. In the last 2 years, there's probably only a total of the seven wins, and probably a couple more other than that, that they had chances to win. This is a team that has improved. It's not good enough, and they need to get better, and it's not okay losing to that team yesterday.
Let's go to Caroline on the north side. Caroline, I don't know what you want to talk about, but I'm sure it'll be interesting. And remember the new rule, 30 seconds. How are you, Caroline?
Yes. I'm concerned about the play calling at this point. We had Pierce, we had Corey Grant, Brian Walters, guys that we know can make big plays, and they did not utilize them. And I was wondering what happened to all some of these big play men that we failed to use, which that is on the coaching. So we should, from now on, consider going to these three big men. Pierce is a good running back. Brian Walters have
But Caroline. Is Bernard Pierce better than T.J. Yeldon?
No, I'm talking about putting him in on certain situations.
I know, but
I'm not saying to start him.
No, I'm just saying, but T.J. Yeldon is a better back than Bernard Pierce.
Corey Grant?
He's a better back than Corey Grant.
I think she's pointing the finger at Toby Gerhart.
He's a better back than Toby Gerhart.
No.
I would coach, he do some dumb things. He called dumb plays, and I take it off the air. May God bless.
Thank you, Caroline.
Point blank, just dumb. Tony, I think she was saying, why not use Pierce or Grant or somebody else instead of Toby Gerhart?
You got one carry, Pete. It wouldn't have been the difference in the game. One carry.
No.
One. I'm just telling you, one carry.
You can't defend every decision they make. You just can't.
I'm not.
Almost.
Captain Sunshine.
Someone. It's not sunshine. It's the fact. TJ Yeldon is the best back on this roster.
Of course he is.
And you want him on the field as much as possible.
Ride your horse, right?
Hey, by the way, Tony, somebody on Twitter said, give Tony Boselli a Snickers bar. He's getting crankier than usual.
I'm not eating sugar, so no thank you.
Steve in Fernandina Beach discussing Marshall and Grant, returners. What's up?
Hey, guys. Appreciate you taking the call. A little bit on what the lady just said. I agree. I think, to be honest, Corey Grant is like the Darren Sproles of this team. If they would utilize him, put him in certain situations, out in the open, one-on-one, even down on the goal line, bring him in close, two tight ends, pitch it to him, let him run to the corner flag.
Come on, wait a second. Wait a second. You are comparing Corey Grant, an undrafted free agent out of Auburn, who made this team as a kick returner, to Darren Sproles? Is that what you're doing?
I'm telling you right now,
he does not have Darren Sproles' ability. Not yet.
He's got speed. He's got the speed.
Oh, trust you. I'll trust you. We'll just trust you. He has great straight ahead speed. He can fly. Darren Sproles is one of the shiftiest guys on this planet, who has great hands and a great receiver out of the backfield. Corey Grant has not shown that skill set yet. I'm not saying he doesn't have it, but if you think these coaches are going to design a whole game plan around Corey Grant, you're crazy.
But he hasn't been given the opportunity. All right, perfect example, Nick Marshall. If the guy's not going to play on defense, throw him in the Wildcat.
Okay, we're done.
With Marshall, that's a new one.
That must be from – he must be an SEC guy.
He's an Auburn fan.
He's an Auburn fan, is what he is. It's not allowed on here. Jeez. We'll take a timeout, guys. How about that?
I'm not even going to answer that. I mean, come on. Now we're going to the Wildcat.
He's
going to
run the Wildcat.
Run the Wildcat. Run the Wildcat like an SEC.
Let's go to the option. Let's put the option game in with Corey Grant. Let's get Malzone as a consultant, and we'll run the Wildcat read option with Nick Marshall and Corey Grant. That's a great play.
Malzahn.
I think, they're doing great this year.
Oh, yeah. It's really great. Let's take a timeout. One more segment of phone calls coming up. 355-NFL-1. 355-6351. No more Wildcat calls, please. This is Jaguars Monday on Jaguars Radio.
When we first signed Jason and we made that decision, we knew that there was going to be some waves, I think, that we were going to have to go through. I like his mentality. We're very confident in him. He had an unfortunate day yesterday. He started off 1-for-1, 2-for-2, but in that heightened environment, it didn't work out for us. I think the confidence comes with his demeanor and mentality. And we know with a younger kicker like this, he's going to go through some of these situations.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley earlier today. Jaguars Monday rolls along. JP Shadrick, Tony Boselli. Pete Prisco's down in Fort Lauderdale. Final segment of phone calls tonight. Let's go to Marcus on the west side. Wants to talk about the progress so far. Good evening, Marcus.
How are you guys doing today?
Okay.
That's good to hear. I kind of have a different outlook than the rest of the Jaguar fans, because when I look at the team, I'm looking at it as progression standpoint. I heard a caller earlier say we are getting better. We're miles away from where we were last year. I feel like that's correct. At the same time, I hear a lot of fans just in my general community that feels like they talk like the season is over. And if I'm mistaken, we're in like week 5.
That's right.
Or am I not mistaken?
It's so week 5.
It's not the end of the. It's not the end of. Sorry about that, guys. It's not the end of the world, so to speak.
Okay.
So I wonder, fans, we have to be a little bit more. I know we have already been patient, but we have to be a little bit more understanding that this is a young team, and we can only get better as we gel together. I honestly believe that the arrow is pointing up for this team, and I'll tell you guys comments off
all
the air.
All right. Thanks a lot. Well, I mean, you said it all night. Right?
Everyone knows what I think. Pete, go ahead and answer the question.
Well, yeah, they are. They have a lot of young talent. Some of it's on the field, some of it's not. And there's going to be growing pains. And, one of the things that we need to point out, too, is at some point, everybody wants to point to the kicker and everything. You got to score touchdowns. Right now, the Jaguars, right now, as is, before tonight's game, they're 29th in the league inside the 20. They have four touchdowns, 36.6% on their 11 possessions. That's just, you simply, that's not good enough. You have to be able to score touchdowns.
I agree.
I agree, too. Mac on the north side is with us tonight. Good evening, Mac.
Hey, what's up, Mac?
Hey, Mac, how are you? There's another one of my long-lost fans from yesteryear. Tony, just for you.
Ask if anyone cares. Let's go. Mac, what's your question?
Okay, here it is. I was devastated from that loss, and I'm going to take this Tony Vasilli's approach. Thursday night, the Texans are going to beat the Colts, and then we're going to beat the Buccaneers, and I'll be at the game in Tampa, and then it's going to be 2-3.
Okay.
2-3, tied for first, playing a division game. I'm all for that. I like it. Yeah. Yeah, let's go. Keep it up.
Let's go to Chuck on the west side. Good evening, Chuck.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Thank you. You got 30 seconds.
I guess my statement is I'd like to see more of the veterans on the offense involved in plays like Pierce and Toby Gerhardt and people. Because that's going to help us when we get in the red zone.
Yeah, I disagree 100%.
Let
me cut you off real quick because I disagree 1,010%.
That's impossible.
What's the biggest disagreement you can have? Because
100.
You're going to put your best players on the field and your best running back is T.J. Yeldon.
I agree, and I wouldn't give Gerhardt many carries at all, if ever.
Short yardage even, Pete?
You know, it used to infuriate me when they used to do that to Fred Taylor. Because I thought Fred Taylor could have had a lot more touchdowns, many more touchdowns than he had, and they used to bring James Stewart in. Is James Stewart a better red zone runner than Fred Taylor? I don't care if he could leap over tall buildings. He's not a better runner than Fred Taylor.
Yeah, Fred only had 18 touchdowns his rookie year.
Yeah, but go look at his career touchdowns.
I know,
Tony.
That's what I'm saying. I agree with you 100%. I never understood it either.
And Gerhardt is not as good a runner as Yeldon. Leave Yeldon in the game, period.
Yeah, I agree.
Jimmy in Vancouver. I guess that's in Canada.
Hey,
Jimmy,
guys,
what's up, man?
Going? First of all, on that point, just really quickly, because I never ended up 30 seconds. But also, Stacey Mack got goal line touches against Fred Taylor. Oh, my God, what were you thinking looking back? My point was, my real point, was, Pete, I think the story you need to write, and you've all touched on it tonight, is that the power balance in the AFC South has shifted. Yesterday, for the first time, last time we went against Indy, it was a massive field goal as time expired, and we got lucky. We are now the better team. Like, given all the mistakes, all the penalties, which are also horrible refereeing,
yeah,
the balance has shifted. It really has shifted.
Yeah, thanks for the
call. They didn't play Andrew Luck yesterday.
Well, let me say this, though, Pete, where I do agree. Right now, with our pass rush, Andrew Luck would be a problem. But if you had a pass rush against that team, I don't think it's that much different.
Does Jacksonville have anybody on defense as good as Vontae Davis?
No, he's a very good corner.
Do they have any playmakers as good as T.Y. Hilton?
Deep threat?
No, not yet. I mean, you would think that Marquise could be that guy,
but he's not right now.
Right, and so you add – that's two huge voids there.
Okay, but the offensive line is much better in Jacksonville than it is in Indy.
Yeah, it's much better.
Yes,
it's
much.
It Pete. Could be.
Much. No, they're much. Not, Pete, I go watch the Indy, tape. Go watch
I think
Indy
the Indy
tape.
Line, I think the Indy line stinks, except for Costanzo's okay. The rest of it's not very good. But much better, Tony?
They don't have a great pass rush either. They only had one sack, and it was on a blitz.
Well, Mathis is just now getting back into form.
I'm just telling you, they don't have a great pass rush, Pete.
Right now, as the season moves on, would you take Mathis or Clemens?
Mathis, but it's not much different because Mathis is at the end of the road, too.
But he's better.
But, Pete, they don't have a pass rush. They had one sack.
I agree. They're not a great team. Luck helps cure their ills. I mean, there's no question about it. What about Odrick? I wanted to bring that up. I mean, isn't it time for Odrick to start making plays all over the place?
I'd like that.
He has been. Wouldn't you characterize him right now as a disappointment?
Outside the Miami game.
Right. He played one game and played well in that game, and after that, he hadn't done anything.
Not very many flash plays, no.
Right. And he's not a flash play player. That's not who he is. But you expect more.
I think that's fair.
What more? What would be more for him?
More splash plays.
Splash plays. But that's not his position, to be a splash play guy,
More
right?
big plays. More tackles,
tackles for loss, yeah, that kind of stuff. Right.
I mean, right now, and they're playing different positions, but Tyson Alualu is probably getting more penetration, and maybe maybe that's not fair because he's playing that two technique. I mean, that two gap head up four technique on the offensive tackle. So maybe it's not fair. You know, I don't know. But I think everyone probably expected a little bit more. It's still early, only four games in, and we'll see.
How did Armbrister play on the tape when he went in?
I mean,
lost?
Not lost. No, I don't think he was lost at all. He does not react as quickly. He does not diagnose plays as quick as Puz does.
Well, that's natural.
Yeah, no, but he was not lost. No,
there was the one play I remember where it was right after he came onto the field where he got beat, kind of the sideline there, right?
Yeah, but I mean,
but that happened. You're right off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, you know? He was not. I mean, he's not Puz, but. It would be unfair to say he looked lost out there at all.
Your fellas at your favorite site gave Dan Skuda a good grade.
Oh, here we go.
I thought Dan Skuda, he doesn't play very many plays because most teams are in three wides and he comes off the field in three wides. When he's in there, he's physical. He plays well. He comes downhill. I think Dan Skuda is a solid player at Sam linebacker.
All right. See, I couldn't get him going.
Did you ever bury the hatchet with him? Tony?
Yeah, we played text tag. We never talked, though. So
the PFF guys?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, what was it last week they gave Aaron Rodgers a negative grade or something? I mean,
yeah. Like, after he threw five touchdown passes.
I mean, come on. I mean,
somebody's doing a story on them, and they called me to get some quotes from me. And I said, look, I understand and respect what they do. They for positional alignments and how many times a team lines up in this way and blitzes and everything else. But you can't tell me that their grading system is accurate because nobody knows whose assignment is what on each play. And I used you and Steve Hutchinson and Bentley as reference points. To a man, each one of you said, a lot of times the team doesn't know the assignment on the offensive line until you go into the meeting room and you find out and figure out what it is.
That's right. I mean, listen, all I got to say about their grading system is they gave Aaron Rodgers a negative grade after he threw five touchdown passes. I have nothing else to say.
We'll come back in a moment and look around the National Football League in Week 4. Thanks for the calls tonight. Final moments of Jaguars Monday coming up on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HennanyAutos.com studio. Jaguars Monday continues right now.
The Jags are inviting all women who love the game of football to a special event. Meet Me at the 50, presented by PRI Productions. That's Thursday, October 15th. Features a Q&A session with Jags players and coaches. And it's a keynote address by ESPN's Susie Colbert. Get your tickets today at jaguars.com/50. We'll go around the league in just a moment.
Yeah, real
but
quick.
First,
you'll love these. I got a couple great tweets. How about this one from a guy? Hey, Tony, how about putting the team on buses for Tampa game? Nice message to underperforming players.
You guys once took a bus back from Tampa when you had weather with the plane,
yeah,
right?
Plane, yeah, it actually almost crashed. We had an emergency land back in Tampa.
Yeah, I remember that.
Maybe we should put them on boats to London. That'd help, too. I mean, I just think some of these things are, I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean,
I got a tweet about you. It says, why is Tony so rude tonight? He's treating everybody like garbage.
I don't – and this is what – the problem is what people want – I guess what they want me to say.
Yeah. Let's just see his face right now.
I'll be like a politician. Let me take the populist view. The Jaguars stink. Gus Bradley doesn't know what he's doing. He should scream at players more. They're terrible. The offensive line stinks. They should cut Luke Jokel. Blake Bortles is never going to do it. The defensive coordinator doesn't know what he's doing. They're terrible. They're terrible. They're terrible. They're terrible. Is that better? Does everyone feel better now about themselves? Give me a break. The people don't like hearing the truth.
What's the truth?
The truth is this is a young team that lost a game that they should have won yesterday because of dumb penalties and not making plays when you had to most and a young kicker missing a game-winning kick. That's the truth.
And it's funny how different the perception would be if the kick went through, right? I mean, everybody would be saying, first place. Making progress.
Look at how great they were. 100, 300-yard passer, 100-yard receiver, 100-yard rusher. We're going to win the AFC South. A foot to about 3 feet to the left on the game winner, the 53-yarder, regulation, everything changes. 5 feet to the right on the one that he missed in overtime, Everyone has a different message. I'm not going to sit here and say what you guys want to hear.
See, if I were a fan of the Jaguars, this is what I would think. I would think
Hold on, Pete. Go call into the other shows because you'll hear the people just regurgitate what you call in and say. Do that.
But here, Tony. Here, if I were a fan of the Jaguars, if you're sitting out there, here's what you need to do when you watch games. Is the quarterback making progress? That's the question, the ultimate question. And in the first half, he looked like he was making big-time progress on the road in a big game. Second half, not so much, but he's making progress. That's all. People are going to think I'm crazy when I say this. That is all that matters right now because this team isn't going to compete for a division title. They're not going to push for a playoff spot. It's all about getting the quarterback to go to the next level. If he goes to the next level, you fill in everything else. You try and stay healthy next year, and next year you make a push. That's all that matters. That's it.
Pete, you know how many games Blake Bortles has started now in his career?
What is it now? 16?
Yesterday was 17.
17.
He started 17 games. Go look at the history of the NFL. I mean, the guy for being basically just finishing his first year of starting games has improved, threw for over 300 yards, no interceptions, and gave his team a chance to win on the road in the division in regulation and then in overtime. That is a fact. Now, no one might want to hear that today, and I'm as upset as anybody and frustrated, but if you bear it down to what the facts are, what happened yesterday, that's the facts. Do they need to get better at positions? Yes. Do they need to rush the passer? Absolutely. Do they maybe need to get more aggressive because they can't rush us four? Sure. But that's the fact. If you don't like it, you can call in and say what you want, but I'm not going to sit here and agree with you when I think you're saying something that makes no sense. Like running the Wildcat with Nick Marshall.
That is out there. That is way out there.
It is. Just the facts, man. Let's look around the National Football League. The Dolphins fired Joe Philbin after the loss in London yesterday. Dan Campbell is the interim head coach.
I don't even want to get into the firing of Philbin. I think everyone knew that was coming. Are you surprised Dan Campbell's the head coach?
You know what it looked like to me, Tony? Like they went down the hallway and went through everybody in the building and said, okay, who is the biggest anti-Joe Philbin guy here that looks like, doesn't look like him, doesn't act like him, isn't him, played in the league, has a toughness? Dan Campbell, you're the interim coach. That's what it looked like.
I was shocked. I mean,
did you think it'd be Duffner?
I didn't know who it would be. I mean, really, no, but I didn't think, I mean, Dan Campbell's not, I mean, young guy, didn't retire that long ago, just got into coaching in 2011.
But it can't be either the coordinators because there was talk that they wanted to fire both of those guys.
No, I agree. I'm not saying anything negative about Dan Campbell. It was shocking.
It was odd. I would have picked. I thought Duffner might have a chance, but
he's a Philbin guy, though, isn't he? Weren't they together a long time ago?
Yeah.
Giants going to Buffalo and get a big win over the Bills on Sunday.
That's Tom Coughlin at his finest. Whenever you don't think his team is going to be good, somehow, some way, they find a way and they end up winning games like that.
The reality is they should be 4-0. And at least 3-1. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if they win the division.
No, not the way the Cowboys are playing without all their players. And the Eagles, I mean, Chip Kelly, come
on. He's a genius, Pete.
Yeah, right?
Haven't you forgot? He's a genius.
I forgot.
He invented the game.
All the smoothies, all the sleep, you know, things that he does and everything else. The guy revolutionized the game with that offense.
You know what you can do with all the smoothies and sleep and all that? You can stick it where the sun doesn't shine because at the end of the day, it's about making plays. And I can go down a long list, and I'm not saying it's right. Listen, eating healthy and taking care of your body gives you a better chance of being better, but that's not the difference in this game because I know plenty of guys – that hit it hard all week, and including the night before the game, and come Sunday, they played.
Signed LT, right?
And there's Lawrence a lot Taylor. More. There's a lot more of that.
But game. I mean, he was the best defensive player who ever lived in my eyes, and he used to show up at the stadium at 7 a.m. And you know what? Bill Parcells, the biggest hypocrite out there, said, "Oh, wait, Lawrence was out all night, but I need him. He's going to play today."
Panthers are 4-0, big win over the Bucks. Jameis threw four picks yesterday. And the Jags get him next week.
I hope he throws four more next week.
And he didn't look good, by the way. And you know what? There are going to be games like that when you have a rookie quarterback. There are going to be games like that when you have a second-year quarterback. I think the interesting thing about this is the reason the Jacksonville Jaguars picked Blake Bortles was because they thought Blake Bortles was better than what they had in the next draft. Well, here they are, two guys. The one pick from this year, the three pick from last year going head-to-head.
I'll say this. watching, and this is nothing to Jameis, but watching Tennessee getting ready for the Colts, Mariota's not bad, Pete.
I told you. I was astounded.
Like, I was watching. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I was astounded at how much better he is throwing the football than I thought he would be when he came out of Oregon.
He's got a chance to be a really good quarterback.
All Falcons most of the day. Good football team. They beat the Texans 48-21. Had a huge lead early in this game.
That Atlanta team is, you know, you knew they had the quarterback. That's why that job was attractive to a lot of people. You knew they had Julio Jones. I think the biggest difference, there are two things, big difference with the Falcons. One is the offensive line. They went out and got Mike Person. He was a guard in St. Louis, and he's now playing center for them and doing a good job. Jake Matthews is playing as well as those young tackles in the league. There's a lot of them. He's playing as well as any of them. And they got two new guards in Levitre and Chester. The line is better. Defensively, much faster. They're playing much faster on defense.
You know what's interesting is the Texans, and J.J. Watt's a great player. I think he had another sack, at least one yesterday.
He did.
But it's so, I mean, that's why, not that, I mean, I would pay J.J. whatever you had to get him, but getting one defensive lineman isn't going to fix a defense. I mean, they got issues on that side of the ball.
Well, they have issues because he does his job. Vince Wilfork doesn't do his. He's a shell of himself. Clowney's getting there, but he's not quite there yet, obviously. You come back from microfracture surgery, it's going to take time, and you only see flashes of it. They've never addressed, like, the merciless guys and all those guys. They've never stepped up. I think Cushing is, you know, just okay.
The injuries for Cushing have added up. He's not the same player he was when he was before he got hurt.
Kareem Jackson's a pretty good player in the corner. Joseph is solid. The rest of those guys are just okay. You look at me, you add it all up, and they're not playing very well.
The Bengals, Pete, you're going to work on them this week. They're 4-0. Big win over the Chiefs.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, watching their tape, a couple things stand out. One, they might have the best combination of the lines in the league. When you talk about an offensive line with Whitworth and Andre Smith and you know, Zeitler and Bowling, and they do a lot of good things up front. And defensively, Geno Atkins is back to being Geno Atkins. There was a play yesterday where he split a double team for a sack, and it was, and then it was another play where he dropped a guy for a one-yard loss, Tony. Power, power, power. He threw the guy. The guy actually had him, and he just kept his power and threw him to the side and tackled the runner for a one-yard loss. They're back.
And the other thing is the quarterback's playing well.
Really well. And you know what? They got Seattle this week in Cincinnati, so all the naysayers are waiting for him to fall on their face. We'll see.
Todd Gurley, 146 yards. The Rams beat the Cardinals 24-22.
And I was looking at the stat line, and I don't have it exactly, but he had like five carries over 20 yards in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, and watch that game. Early in the game, he couldn't get going, did nothing in the first half, and in the second half, they just gashed him. And, you know, when you're the Cardinals and you play the defense they do, I give them credit because I like the style that they do. They play the extra defensive back a lot. But at times, you're going to get blocked and you're going to have big runs, and that's what Gurley hit him with. And smart running, too, by the way. He had a chance on the sideline where it looked like he was going to get knocked out of bounds, and he stopped and stayed in bounds late in the game. Kid's going to be a good runner. The problem is he's a running back, and we know they don't last long, and they don't change the game anymore.
Broncos defense. Well, the Broncos are undefeated. Their 23-20 win over Minnesota kept them that way.
Best defense in football, and they're not winning because of Peyton Manning. They're winning because of that defense.
No question about it. They got pass rushers, and they have corners. If you have pass rushers and corners and a quarterback who's capable of making plays, which they have, then you're going to have a good football team. That's a good football team. They still got a, you know, they had a long run with Ronnie Hillman yesterday. I don't think they run the ball well.
They can't block up front very well.
No.
What was PFF's rating on the Packers quarterback yesterday, Pete? 17-3 win over 49ers.
Yeah, and you know, he's clearly a different guy on the road. I don't, you know, as weird as it is, he doesn't put the same numbers up at home. I mean, again, Tony, we've talked about that. That's the mystifying thing to me. Why, when you go on the road, the field's the same. You're just playing in a different stadium. Why the hell can't you play like you do at home?
Well, I think maybe some of it's because of all the communication stuff he does at home, hard count, changing plays, getting in when it's on the road and it's loud.
It's quiet at Lambeau.
But not just him. I'm talking about everybody.
No, that's what I'm saying, but it's harder. It's harder to communicate. It's harder to get, you know, audible. It's harder to get things you want on the road because at a loud stadium, communication is an issue.
Yeah, and they're still the best team in the league in my mind.
Drew Brees threw his 400th touchdown. It was an overtime winner to C.J. Spiller, and the Saints beat the Cowboys last night. How about that win?
Yeah, and that's a huge win for the Saints because their season's over if they don't win, and you know, they found a way to win that game. He didn't look the same, though.
He's not. He's not the same, Pete.
But I mean, he didn't even look the same as he did early in the season. That shoulder's got to be bothering him. You could tell by they highlighted his motion. He doesn't have a long windup anymore like he used to, and it's clearly bothering him. They go on this road to Philadelphia. That's essentially an elimination game. That's almost like a playoff game. One of those two teams is going to go to 1-4.
Monday Night Football. The Lions are 0-3 somehow. They'll face the 12th man and the Seattle Seahawks tonight at CenturyLink Field.
What is going on with that Detroit offense, Pete? Shouldn't they be better with all the weapons they have?
They don't know who they are, Tony. Who are they? You know, they've always been a Matt Stafford offense, throwing the ball around with Calvin Johnson and Golden Tate and everything. Then they draft the running back. They draft the guard. They're going to run the ball more and be more physical. Well, they're neither. They don't know who they are. And so I think that's a problem there. They also will start a rookie guard tonight in Tomlinson. He's going to take over at left guard. I'll be interested to see what they do at Seattle. That's a tough place to play. You know that. But the Lions season is on the line. I have a strange feeling they're going to go in there and compete with them. I don't think they'll win the game, but they'll keep it tight.
No, I think Seattle's going to put it to them. No Marshawn Lynch, though. He's inactive with that hammy or groin, whatever it is.
They don't have the same
swagger. They don't on offense. The defense is still great, though.
We'll see. It hasn't been great this year. We'll see.
Good matchup tonight on Monday Night Football. A couple minutes left here, guys. The Jags trying to move on now. A third road game in a row coming up. Tampa Bay, we just talked about Jameis throwing the four picks yesterday. Is there a must win? Is this one, Pete?
No, I don't think it's a must win because, you know, must wins happen for teams that are supposed to do something. This team's not supposed to do anything, so I don't think it's a must win, but it'd be nice if they started scoring touchdowns. That's what they have to do. This is a team that needs to score touchdowns. You get in the red zone. You look at those plays in the red zone. You got to convert one of those into a touchdown. And if they do, they win the football game. So, to me, that's what I want to see. I want to see how they handle themselves in the red zone.
I think next two weeks are big games because they're both teams that you're at least as good as or maybe better. And they're two games before you go to London. I think it's very important that this team comes out and plays very well.
So you think they get the 3-3?
I'm not saying that.
Oh.
Pete. I'm just saying I think it's very important that they play well. Like you said, I think they got to execute. They got to score points. These are two games that, listen, winning is the ultimate goal. But two games you'd like to see more than 24 points in.
Pete, well done. We'll talk to you next week.
You
man.
Got it, guys. Take care. Tony, ease up, man. You got to relax a little bit.
Shut up, Pete.
Pete Briscoe down in Fort Lauderdale for Tony Vaselli, Joe Fortunato, and everyone involved. This is JP Shadrick. We'll talk to you next Monday on Jaguars Monday.